Welcome to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. If you believe that passing down Christian faith is essential for the next generation, you are in the right place. Enjoy conversations with guests who are faith practitioners, parents, caregivers, pastors, counselors, and many more. You'll enjoy practical tools and community for passing down Christian faith to your children and grandchildren. Just a note as we get started today, you will hear that Lindsay and I talk about this being our last episode of the series on moving forward by looking back, and you will quickly begin to discover that we had a good time with that podcast and spent more time on it than, well, I was going to say more time than we should have, but all of it is worth listening to. So what we have done is we have taken and divided this up into two podcasts. So what you're hearing now will be the part one of two podcasts as we deal with the final thoughts on moving forward by looking back. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome back as we continue our series on moving forward by looking back. I'm Leon, and it's good to be with you all today. And as usual, I'm here with Lindsay. Hello, Lindsay.
Hey, Leon. Hey, everybody. It's great to be here.
Yeah, we're just a few weeks now into the new year. I hope things are going well for you.
Yes, it is. I can't believe how quickly it's going so far. Time just flies by, but I'm really enjoying reflecting on what has been of last year, looking forward to this year. And so I think the series is so timely and helpful in all areas of life.
Yeah, for sure. And we're going to continue this series that we started 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, this is week three.
Week three. And I think we're going to wrap it up today. Okay. And this will really set, I think, the foundation for us as we move forward in some of the things we want to share with our families about ways that they can effectively pass their faith on to their kids.
Yeah, we've been focusing a lot on the practical side of that, of passing faith on in practical ways in our series we had before this one. But I'm really enjoying, Leon, that we're taking a deeper dive into the why behind the practicality and the what of passing on faith.
And I think that can be challenging at times. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned in the last episode, I'm a what guy. And Dr. Freesius, who's with us today, is more of a why guy, at least from this perspective. And it's challenged me to think a little more deeply about why we're doing the things that we're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of know it.
Of course.
I mean, I have a pretty good sense of why we've invested in this podcast and in other things that we're going to be doing. But it's a good reminder to kind of work through it and dig a little deeper than what you're used to digging.
It is. And I know we started out the podcast talking a lot about the why, you know, and how this project came to be and the vision behind it. But we all know in life and in leadership, vision leaks, and it's important to come back and say, okay, here's why we're doing what we're doing. So yeah. I think there's no better time to do it than right now.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So if you're a new listener to our podcast, you may want to go back to episode 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Where we kind of unfolded the journey that we've been on that brings us to this point.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, the origin of the Center for Faith and Family and how the Faith Together podcast came to be, and then why we believe it's not just a great idea to pass on faith to the next generation, but it is actually mandated by the Lord in Scripture and the passion of you and I's lives to do so. So
I won't mention the Deuteronomy text because I'll go on a little tangent. So we're going to
stay. Yes, and we know you and your rabbit trails.
Yes.
We have to guard those.
So let's do a little bit of remembering where we have been.
Yeah.
So last time we were together, we were talking about ancient practices, what we've kind of labeled as pre-Christian era practices that were part of the early church. And when we say early church in this context, we're talking basically after the apostles and the writing of the New Testament books up to the 300s when Constantine kind of made Christianity a national religion.
Okay, that's really helpful because I've been thinking a lot about that as far as the timeline goes, and I'm glad you clarified that because I was wondering myself, okay, where exactly is this? Is this after the disciples? Is it during, you know, those, so after the apostles and the first 300 years or so until Constantine.
Yeah, and if I'm wrong on any of that, I'll let Mark fix that.
Yes, we have the expert with us today.
So just going back to the review part, so we're looking at pre-Christian Christians. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
When Christianity was not the norm.
Yes, it was not a part of culture.
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
And then looking at the way that they passed on faith to new believers and to their children, and finding out what techniques, maybe that's not the right word, maybe it's more of intentionality, their methods that they used to pass on faith, and what we can learn in kind of a post-Christian world that we live in today from examples that they've left for us.
Yeah, so moving forward by looking back.
Moving forward by looking back. Okay, so I think it's time to get the expert in on this conversation. Mark, we're glad you're with us again.
Thanks, Leon. It's good to be back with you.
You're sitting there listening to this and probably wondering, when are they ever going to get to me? And are they just going to do all this on their own?
We have a way of just starting to chat and catch up here. So we thank you for your patience.
Yeah.
Oh, no problem at all.
So 3-year journey, these new converts, right? That's
right.
Where we left off.
Yeah.
And we talked about some of the ingredients that were part of that 3-year journey of discipleship.
Right. And I wanted to embrace the kind of theme of the podcast of moving forward by looking back, by going back to the last podcast just a little bit. But before I do that, just a quick note, because I got to correct Leon.
Oh, man.
Oh, here we go.
He called it the last one. So,
okay.
Constantine makes Christianity a legal religion, but not a national religion.
Oh, okay.
And so if any of my students are out there listening,
they know
that I tell them that all the time.
That's a good corrective, because I didn't realize that. So it was, I just assumed because he's the emperor, he's going to make this the religion for everybody.
Right.
And that wasn't the case.
Yeah, it's not the case. So
okay.
That happens.
Wow.
Interesting.
For those who are terribly curious, it happens in the year 380 with Emperor Theodosius the First. And that's how you know I'm a pedantic historian.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if anybody understands what you just said, but that's good. So I apologize to Dr. Strickland, my church history professor, that I did not remember that.
Oh, that's okay. So anyway, moving back to kind of podcast two, one of the things we talked about was kind of how did the early church kind of deal with the Bible? And oftentimes, you know, in spoken environment, and as we're kind of dialoguing back and forth with each other, some of the things that you wanted to say get left out. And so I wanted to kind of make sure that I went back and kind of clarified what exactly kind of their thoughts and positions are, and kind of how that compares with us. The difference, I think, in between them and us is not found in terms of the importance that they place on it. We, in the contemporary climate as Protestants, we put a lot of importance on the Bible, and they also do put a lot of importance on the Bible as well. Each of us see the Bible as an important part of faith and of understanding our faith, and probably what we would find is that the early Christians more lack the access to the Bible that we tend to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
We have Bibles everywhere. They would have a book of the Bible that their church would have access to. So that would create some of that, those differences in terms of approach. So I tend to find the major difference in terms of how and why they deploy the Bible, not in terms of the importance they place on it. So they tended to have a very measured application of the Bible as people were starting their faith journey. So they wouldn't give the whole Bible at the outset. And instead, they tended to focus on memorizing key passages. And here I'd probably note not like exact memorization. We tend to, maybe if you've done like a Bible quiz or something like that, like it is memorize word for word.
The Awana Club.
Yeah,
we probably have some families familiar with that.
And they didn't necessarily think we have to memorize like every single word that was there, but that we have to have the sense of what the passage is talking about. Where they did focus on memorizing exactly was then with the creeds, which is where we kind of left off last time, that they had this doctrinal formation.
Okay, creeds. That may be a new term for our listeners. So what is a creed? What's the purpose of creeds? Where do they come from? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so a creed is essentially just a statement of faith. They were originally designed for the end of this journey, that when you were baptized, the creeds would be a formal set of questions that you would answer. So that's where we get the name. It's from the Latin credo, I believe. And so your bishop or your priest would ask you, do you believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth? And you would respond with, I believe. And then we would move on to the next part. So they were essentially just statements of faith tied to basic principles of Christian doctrine.
Okay, can we take a little rabbit trail?
We can.
Okay.
Here we go.
So probably the most popular of the creeds would be the Apostles' Creed, right? Most people have heard of the Apostles' Creed.
That's what I actually thought of right away as you were talking about creeds.
Yeah. And so that was written by the apostles?
No.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's a part where kind of legend and fact kind of disagree with each other a little bit. So the legend is that each of the apostles wrote one of the sections of the Apostles' Creed, and so they all kind of contributed to it. We don't really start to find evidence for the Apostles' Creed until at least midway, around the 150s, give or take. And we would have others who would have competing versions that we call a rule of faith.
Okay. So if nothing else, the apostles at least influenced and had significant contribution in thought the formation of the creed, right?
Yeah, they would see it as reflective of what the apostles had taught.
Okay, very good. All right, enough of that rabbit trail. Let's get back to where we were.
So they would memorize those. And part of it was the idea of keeping them on a proper doctrinal path to avoid. There were a lot of false teachings that were going on then, and trying to keep them off of those paths and onto a proper kind of Christian path. And then they would also see it as providing kind of a foundation for later study of the Bible. I tend to think about it, I wear glasses. Leon wears glasses. Lindsay, you're lucky. But they're the lens that I see the world through.
Mm-hmm.
That makes the world clearer.
Mm-hmm.
And for these early Christians, the creeds are essentially the lens that they see the Bible through. That helps them to more clearly see what it is that the Bible is trying to say. And it then would afford them, by focusing on those creeds rather than diving right in on the Bible, it would give them time then to give appropriate preparation for being able to read in the Bible and to do so in a responsible way.
So it seems like it was like laying the theological foundation by which they would then in the future understand the text as they looked at the text.
Right.
Okay, I like that because it gives you a starting point rather than just kind of jumping in trying to figure out what the text means. If you have a pretty solid understanding of God and who God is and what God wants and what sin is and those kinds of things, then as we look at Scripture, then those thoughts are influencing the way we're understanding it.
Right. Yeah, it gives us kind of an interpretive process or foundation.
Yeah, those things that you may return to time and time again because they are foundational and you want to be sure to line them up with what you're learning. And kind of, to me, it sort of functions as a compass, you know, keeping you on that true north.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, on the journey.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. So as you're talking to us about creeds and about not a lack of importance of focusing on the Bible and sharing the Bible with those on the journey. They would do that appropriately with small amounts and with memorization that was more about understanding what was behind those scriptures and why those were important to memorize. What else did you find the mentors during this formational period used as important content and curriculum, I guess, on this journey?
Yeah, so in terms of like materials, right, they would have the creeds that they would look at. And part of that was also so that the mentor could go back and remind themselves of maybe parts of the creeds that they had forgotten about, kind of bringing it fresh to your mind.
That's good. Can I pause there for a second? That's bringing something to mind to me for those of you listening. As we're sharing faith with kids, with students, with those in our own lives, I think it can be as much of a journey and a teaching for us as it is for them. And that's a good reminder of that.
I like that. I like that, Lindsay. That's true. And those of us who are teachers know that to be true.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I love about being a professor is the learning that occurs in my own life as students engage with the topics of conversation. They bring up thoughts I've never considered before, and it becomes a learning community. So, moms and dads and their kids being a learning community together.
Yeah.
That's what I love about this. In an earlier podcast, Lindsay, we mentioned that being a parent who is interested in the spiritual development of their children doesn't require that the parent has it all figured out before they teach it to their kids.
Right.
They're teaching to their kids in many ways as they're learning it themselves. So I think that's a great insight on your part.
Agreed. I think that's something that we can forget easily about and beat ourselves up that we didn't do this right or we should have said this when we're all in process and we're all learning together. So my rabbit trail for today.
No, that's really good. So these mentors are learning as they're teaching is what I'm hearing.
Right. Yeah. So there wasn't the expectation that the mentor had everything, but that the mentor is further along on the journey and certain things they've got kind of worked out and can help the brand new believer with that. But yeah, and this will come out later too, I think, that they understood that this journey is a lifelong journey of belief and of faith. And I don't think they ever kind of thought like, hey, I've arrived, like I'm perfect now, but that I'm on the pathway towards it. And that if I'm farther along on the pathway, then I can go back and help somebody who's just starting out. So part of it then becomes, right, that they have those creeds, but they also, they saw that the mentor was an example figure. Mm. That they tended to focus a lot in terms of how does the mentor live in front of this brand new convert. And they tended to see that's what oftentimes would lead to conversion anyway, was that they would see the way that a Christian is living and they would say, there's something there. I want to maybe model myself after that. And so it became kind of this intentional sort of process of helping them to form their lives in a pattern that the mentor is walking them through. So this tended to be in two kinds of areas, character development, which I usually just call it's who we are when nobody's looking, and then the patient development of habits. So this was a very intentional kind of piece for them where they wanted to say, how can we intentionally build our habits, our life around certain particular principles? Help for the poor, living a righteous life. And so they would see that there are specific habits that we start kind of putting in at the start that then start to grow and develop. And again, the idea wasn't like the second somebody became a Christian, they'll have all of these habits. It has to be placed in there and has to be practiced as they go.
Yeah, so some formation was needed. I imagine if it's the typical person today, there are things they bring with them into their faith, things that they don't have that need to be a part of their faith. So I'm assuming that was part of this journey for them.
Right. So I tend to think of it as additive and subtractive, that there were certain things people would bring in that had to be subtracted out. They would look at kind of their lives and say that how you're living your life is not, I use the term portable, into your new life. So I always think
I like that.
Yeah. I love kind of that idea of portable. And part of it is it kind of connects with my kids too, because they talk about portable all the time with their video games, right? Like there's always some new system that comes out. The PlayStation 4 becomes the PlayStation 5. And then the question is, does my PlayStation 4 game work on my PlayStation 5 game?
And
yeah, so they're trying to ask that kind of question of does how I used to live, does that work now in this kind of Christian environment? Mm. And so they wanted to be very active about intentionally identifying things that are oppositional to a Christian character and then working with their mentee to subtract those out of their lives. For them, one of the big ones was, because they were more adult converts at this point in time, but the occupation that they had. They had pages of discussion about what are appropriate occupations for Christians in this Roman environment.
Really?
Wow. And some of the things on there are sometimes surprising to us, but a lot of it is because it's so influenced by their culture that the act of, say, making cabinets, they could see as connecting, because the cabinets would be for a temple to, say, Zeus or someone like that. And so that your job is contributing to the worship of a false god. Mm. And so they would say, either you need to only sell your cabinets to this, to a church, which we don't have any church buildings yet, so that's going to be difficult. or you need to find a different job. Maybe you can make something else that's not going to be used for the worship of the gods. So they had to have kind of this close examination, right, of their culture to
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Just sounds like the struggle that they're dealing with is a similar struggle that we see in the New Testament quite a bit, where Paul's given instructions to people about things that they should be, I'm thinking the Corinthian church in particular, Paul, you know, fixing them because they're trying to figure out what it means to be Christian, but also questions of meat sacrificed to idols and things like that. Can we eat this? Can we not? And we know that Paul and Peter kind of had debates over those kinds of issues. Sounds like it continued in through the early days of the church.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of questions about kind of what parts of culture are acceptable within Christianity. I call it neutral.
Okay.
So we can use it without kind of damaging ourselves. So it can be used in a way that supports Christianity, or it could be used in other ways. And then other parts they saw as just directly oppositional to Christianity. And so they wanted to say, for those oppositional pieces, we need to be very specific and intentional about helping you remove those. And then for these other pieces, then we have to be intentional about forging them in a way that then becomes supportive of the faith.
So these are really big questions that converts are facing, mentors are facing together. And I tend to also think that there is a connection to the New Testament church, as you were saying, Leon, but also to us today, because I think many times we want our faith with Jesus just to attach to our lives, right? Just to conveniently fit to what we're already doing. I'm doing all these things. I am this person, but I also love Jesus. He fits into my life. And instead, what we see here of the early church walking through and what we see in scripture is it's attaching our lives to his. It is taking on his persona and who he is and really coming from a place of love for him and full devotion to him and not legalism. We want it to be out of love and out of this is who I want to model, to follow. And I think that's something that we deal with right now in our everyday lives, whether it's in our adult lives or our kids or whatever that looks like, that it's easy to forget that we are attaching our lives to Jesus.
Yeah.
Not vice versa.
Yeah. And a lot of it, I think, is that we have to be very aware of what are the cultural influences that are that are present in our lives and to be discerning about that.
Yeah, and I think for these early church believers, it boggles my mind to think about they didn't have a history to fall back on.
That's
true.
They're
kind of creating this.
Yeah, they're writing it as they go.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we rely so much on our past, and not just our personal past, but the past of the church. I mean, things like believing in the Trinity. I mean, we don't even have to really think much about that. That's been worked out by church fathers and other leaders in the past. That's just become a part of the church today. We don't have to kind of
We're at least familiar with the names and the pieces of the Trinity, you know,
right,
of hearing that regularly.
Right.
Yeah.
And while we may not fully understand it, because I don't think any of us can really grasp all of that, but but we have a foundation where people have worked through those struggles on our behalf, and we have the benefit of that. We live in cities we did not build, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these early Christians, this trying to figure this out had to have been a challenge for them.
Yeah, and I think we see a lot of variation in terms of how they want to try to go about it. It's certainly not that they all thought the same way about different vocations, and you would see arguments taking place between them, but you do see kind of them really kind of struggling to say, so what do we do here? And what do we do with this situation? And can we join the military or not?
Yeah.
The military worships the gods. Can we be a part of that? So there becomes a lot of discussion as they're trying to kind of navigate their culture. And that's one of the reasons why I kind of think there's so many of those, we'll use your term, Lindsay, parallels.
Yes.
Between what these early Christians are trying to figure out and kind of the world that we're moving into. In kind of this movement away from Christianity being the dominant force in our culture.
You've been listening to the Faith Together podcast from the Center for Faith and Family at Olivet Nazarene University. Be sure to join us next week as we conclude our conversation with Dr. Mark Freesius as he shares with us practical application of the lessons we've been learning together as we move forward by looking back. For additional resources, check out our website at centerff.com. You can also find us on our new YouTube channel at Center for Faith and Family. Be sure to subscribe so you will receive a notification every time we release a new episode. And remember, when building faith, we are better together.